I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Mark Miller. He is with Hilton Wealth. He has nearly 40 years in tax and wealth management experience. He helps business owners, executives, and high net worth individuals build, protect, and sustain their wealth. He's also a best-selling author. His book's titled Hilton Wealth, How to Invest Like an American Dynasty, reveals the investment and tax strategies used by Fortune 500 companies and the Hilton family. So, Mark, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So, you know, it's interesting. Of course, when you hear the Hilton name, you know, it's hard to imagine somebody that hasn't had some encounter with Hilton. I'm sure there are some, but, you know, at least somebody's driven by a Hilton. You know, just an iconic, legendary brand. And your firm is tied to the Hilton family.
Absolutely.
But what are the how? What are the ties?
Well, you know, I started off in the business, financial consulting business, just out of college. I was an economics major and I went to work for a pretty big company. And I had eyes of being a stockbroker. And over time, I realized I was more kind of just, you know, like selling products and things of that nature. And I wanted to be more of a consultant. And then I started meeting people. Actually, one of my clients actually was a very, very wealthy individual. He introduced me to a whole bunch of people on kind of the trust side of the business, like different trust companies you may have heard of, like Northern Trust, big, big trust companies. And I started to realize there was a better side to the business. And by kind of rubbing elbows with a lot of those folks, I met the Hilton family, in particular, Brad Hilton, who was my main partner, who is the grandson of Conrad Hilton that founded the Hilton Hotels. And Brad and I just kind of hit it off. And the firm that I run, one of the main firms I run, I am the manager of the Hilton Family Office, but kind of a spinoff company we run is called Hilton Tax and Wealth Advisors, which is bringing strategies more down to Main Street for folks. And Brad had a passion for that. I have a passion for that. The rest has been history. We've been doing this for many years, and we just kind of enjoy bringing those advanced strategies more down to the average investor.
Now, I think most people are familiar with family offices, but for those that aren't, in a nutshell, what would you say is a family office and why does it matter?
So why it matters. So first of all, the first family office was actually the Rockefeller family office. John D. noticed that, you know, they were losing a lot of money because they had all these advisors and all the advisors hated each other. They didn't work together. Every single one of them wanted all the money, not less of the money, not work as a team. And then he came up with the concept, hey, let's just take our best people we know, the best advisors in all the different areas, whether it's tax, whether it's investment management, whether it's risk management, insurances, whatever it is, lawyers, estate planning, things of that nature, and let's get them all in an office. And that was the first family office, which was the Rockefeller family office. It's since morphed into family offices where a lot of wealthy families, a number of families get together. It's economies of scale. Plus, it helps them kind of collaborate more. So they all bounce ideas off of each other. And in this modern age, we're what's called a virtual family office, where we still have the advantages of all that collaboration, lower fees, all of that. But the virtual family office allows us to really get best of class people in almost every financial area. So it's kind of a loosely knit family office. It's still considered a family office, but we're going out and we're bringing in folks from all over, not just the country, but the world, to help our clients get the best money management, tax management, risk mitigation, all of those things that come with being part of a family office.
So my wife and I just bought a new house, and we're having to go around. I'm drawing an analogy here, but we're seeing little things that we need done. And so we're gonna have to have a landscaper come in. We're gonna have to have an electrician come in. We're gonna have to have a concrete person come in. And if we had kind of the analogy would be, we've just have somebody that maintains the grounds. And they would organize all that. They would bring in
Sure.
all the people. And so I have a single point of contact as opposed to three or four.
Yeah.
Is that kind of the same thing?
Yeah, in the building or renovation world, you might call that a general contractor. And that's kind of, in essence, we are. It's like me, when I work with my clients, I'm very much like a quarterback to them. The analogy we use is more like a football, because you've got the owner, which is the client, right? Then you got a coach. Then you've got the person on the field, which is the quarterback. The coach has put together all the best players, and that quarterback is kind of guiding everything out on the field and guiding all those best players and making everything happen. So either one of that's a really good way to look at it, is just an overall arching person that's kind of helping everything run smoothly.
Well, and somebody who's used that knows the traits of the best and is used to shopping for those skills and finding the people for those skills,
Absolutely.
which is terrifying because, like a lot of business owners are really good in their lane. They know their business, but for them to manage their wealth, they have to go interview people in an area that's not their expertise.
Yeah, Craig, you hit on a really important point there, because that is so true. And that's one of the things we educate our business owner clients about, is that they're usually good at their trade, but they're not very good at anything else. They're great at making money at that particular thing because they're very targeted. That's what they spent their whole life in. And if they're very successful, they spend a lot of time getting great at that. But yet, think about it. That person, they may have amassed, $1,000,005, $10 million, $20 million, whatever, and been successful. What is the likelihood that they personally are going out DIYing it and finding the best money manager in the entire country? Let's say where they live in our neck of the woods, Atlanta, Georgia. Even if they're focused in Atlanta, Georgia, and they drive by a Raymond James office or Edward Jones or Fidelity or whatever, and then walking in there and go, "Hey, help me with their money." What's the likelihood that that person is going to be the best? Okay. And then in every area, even if it's in, related to your insurance or your CPA or whatever. So, one of the things that a family office does is give you the opportunity to lean on the expertise, like you mentioned earlier, of the people that really know who the best ones are, top five, top 10 in each area in the entire country, and plug into those people for the client's benefit. So, no, you really hit on a good point there. And that's one of the things we just try to educate our business owners about, because they don't know. You don't know what you don't know, right? Until you learn different. And most business owners are very capable people, and they think they can do it all. In reality, many aren't very good at handling their finances to the nth degree.
And if I go back to like my analogy, let me just take landscaping. So we moved to an area that has a different type of soil, and I brought in one landscaper, and he told me one thing about the soil. I'm gonna have to talk to another two or three. And the one thing I know about the guy that I talked to, I'm pretty sure some of the things he told me were right, but I'm also certain that there were a few things he told me that were not
That
true.
were wrong,
And I told my wife, I said, I'm trying to figure out what to believe and what not to believe because I know for a fact he told me some things that are not true. Well, now I have to go do this with two other landscapers. I'm not a landscaping expert. I'm not particularly skilled at hiring landscapers. I got lucky at my old house and got a really awesome referral, and the guy knocked it out of the park. But He doesn't serve where I live, and I think he may be retired now. But that's I see that benefit in the family office, that not only do you know the right people to call, but you know the right questions to ask, and you're better able to sort through the BS, for lack of a better
Sure,
phrase.
sure. Well, at Hilton Tax and Wealth Advisors, we're lucky because we're piggybacking off of the Hilton family office that has tremendous connections. And like we just came back from a huge family office event down in Florida. And every time we go to those events, we get more and more connections and then be able to get, maybe private equity offerings or new tax mitigation strategies. Or new ways to, structure legacy planning, things of that nature. And then, we again bring that down if it fits, if it works, and it can be structured properly for, investors that, more average investors, that we're going to stick that strategy in Hilton Tax and Wealth Advisors.
Yeah. So how did you get into all of this? I mean, you mentioned you took econ in college, which, let me just say, that's a little bit weird. It's like, no, I mean, I love, just for the record, I love economics, and I took econ in college from somebody who had advised two presidents. He was on the, which was
Wow.
fascinating. And I find economics fascinating, but I know of very, very few kids who grew up saying, I want to be an economist.
Yeah,
How did you
well,
end
I
up on that path?
I'm going to tell you, it was kind of a little bit of an accident because I wanted to be a lawyer, and I started a political science a degree in political science, and then frankly, I just didn't want to go to another 2 or 3 years of school, and I saw a couple other people that I knew that my dad knew that were lawyers, and I was kind of like, yeah, do I really want to do that? And then I pivoted to economics, which is the best decision I could have made because that went took me down the path to what I've done for the last 35, 40 years in the financial services industry. So it gave me the background I needed. Of course, college is college. You learn, and I had to learn a lot, obviously on the job. But at least it gave me the foundation and excuse me, it did give me a, like you said, it gave me a passion for economics and a passion for learning about money and kind of the rest is history.
Yeah. It's interesting. So I went through when I went through college, behavioral economics was still in its infancy. And so everything was through the eyes of rationality. We were trying to interpret everything through the eyes of rationality. And in behavioral economics kind of starts with the assumption that people are irrational in their choices. What's been kind of your path of discovery of, studying? Yeah, just judging from your age, you probably also studied under the schools of, rational economics, but it's become clear that we're just irrational beings when it comes to money.
And my career's proven that out. And even when I work with very wealthy individuals, you find out that you think, oh, well, they got so wealthy because they're so incredibly logical and make every single perfect decision and all that. Let's be honest, money is still a very emotional topic for people. And everyone is different. And I will tell you, most of the people we work with, they've got some kind of behavioral issue related to money. Maybe hurt when they were young, or maybe a divorce, or whatever it is, that most people have something that's really driving them and makes money a very emotional issue. Now, we could sit there all day long and talk about, oh, but it needs to be logical. You need to look at the math and all of that type of thing. But the reality is, and I've said this before, and I've even had clients say this to me before, I'm like their therapist. That, and it's true that it's like, hey, it's going to be fine. Everything's going to be good. We're going to get you set up properly. We're going to do the things we need to do. But, I think one of the biggest things that I learned is that the biggest differentiator between a retail investor and like a smart money investor, these people are very wealthy, is smart money investors tend to be focused on safety, security first of their funds and returns later, which is kind of odd. You think it might be the other way around. Actually, the retail world has taught us to be focused on nothing but returns. Ignore the downsides, ignore that roller coaster in the stock market. Look at all the money you're going to make here. Those types of things. Look at the returns. And it's just the opposite. So the reason I brought that up and you talking about this, because that is an emotional thing. That's emotional reaction. How do people feel when they're on that roller coaster? How do people feel when that roller coaster is instead of one of the big ones and then has a steep, steep fall, maybe more of the kiddie roller coaster? Is that, yeah. Do they have a preference from one or the other? Is their stomach can handle one or the other better? That type of thing. So it's a very, money is a very behavioral issue.
Well, I can tell you in marketing, there's a book that any savvy marketers read. It's called Predictably Irrational by Dan Ariely.
Mm-hmm.
And we count on it. We count on irrationality. And we just, by its title, you can predict the ways in which people are irrational. And one of those ways are people are way more motivated to minimize loss than they are to maximize gain.
Mm-hmm.
And that motivation is so strong, sometimes it becomes counterproductive where they cost themselves more trying to minimize loss just because the thought of loss is so incredibly painful.
Sure, sure. It can cut the other way too, though, where people are, they're so hung up because there are certain people we work with that they're driven mostly by greed. And we usually have to rein them in a little bit and say, hey, great that you got here, but you know, you're at a certain age now. Let's pull the reins in a little bit and let's focus more on safety and security. I tend to be, because I've just seen wealthy, really truly wealthy people, ultra wealthy people. And I see that first and foremost, they're like, hey, I want to make sure the majority of my portfolio is safe and secure. Boom, 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 just bringing the income in. And I know if I make a major mistake, that I don't fall from being ultra wealthy to just grow wealthy, mm-hmm. which, you know, we'd all like to have that problem, right? But the reality is it's just, you know, everyone's different. People have different motivations. They have different upbringing in relation and in different kind of psyches about money. And it's just about kind of getting to know those people and getting to know them well enough to really be able to kind of, you know, get in their heads and ultimately put them in the right place where they know they're going to be comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and one of the areas, you know, so we've marketed in the financial space, and one of the personas that we had to study and understand was we had a client that had a financial newsletter. And so there, you know, the subscribers of those newsletters were people that picked individual stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And there, fortunately, there was a lot of research out there on the behavioral economics of those people. And it was interesting. Some of the common traits were that they would buy stocks after they had already run up because it was the hot stock to buy.
Mm-hmm.
So they would buy a stock too late and they would sell it. They would also sell it too late. You know, when something would start falling off, there was some trigger in them that says, no, I can't sell this because I paid X more. I'll wait until I make my money back and then
they ride it all the way down.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the average retail investor. And that's why when they do studies and this is confirmed, and they generally, the average retail investor makes about 2% per year. Okay. And that might be a little generous when you probably look at the bigger piece of, and so, you know, I've always believed, and as I got older, when I probably got, you know, around 40 or so, I started to understand and started to communicate with people these concepts that ultimately I learned that the wealthy of the wealthiest use. And that is that you've got to try to take as much emotion that you can out of the situation. We were talking about emotion logic earlier, because it can make you do crazy stuff. It can make you do that, you know, buy high and sell low consistently over time. And the only way you can really suck that emotion out is to have portfolios that are very steady, that are not like, you know, have wild swings in them. So anyway, I mean, we tend to, and the Hiltons tend to be very risk averse because, again, time and time again, we've proven we can get great returns and have incredible portfolios, and we don't have to take massive amounts of risk. We have to participate in all of this, mayhem and crazy stuff that's going on in the markets out there.
Well, I would say, I know in my business, I need outside voices. The worst marketing I do is the marketing I do for myself. And fortunately, I have, a couple friends that I talk with and I bounce ideas off, and they're like, "Well, Craig, you're just looking at this wrong." But it's because I have a blind spot because I'm too emotionally attached to my own business. And I think the same thing happens when you're talking about your own wealth. There's so many emotions stirring that you need a voice speaking into that that isn't caught up in that emotional swirl, that can sit there and give a very sober analysis of what's going on and what steps should happen next.
Absolutely. That's true. And I think that it's like having an objective eye on things, or several sets of eyes on things, and being able to step back a little bit and pull that emotion out and be look at things more rationally, like
Yeah.
we mentioned earlier. So because there has to be a good balance of that. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be emotion at all. If there was zero emotion, then a lot of my business owners that became very, very wealthy with great ideas and visionary types of things, if they weren't very emotional and passionate about that, then they would never have made what they made.
Right.
But there comes a time when you have to have that balance when it comes to building. And ultimately, our portfolios are called True Hilton True Wealth portfolios. And we have focused so much on that true wealth concept. What is true wealth? Well, I believe true wealth is not just amassing a whole bunch of money. True wealth is about having great life balance. And sometimes we have clients that come to us to have terrible life balance. We try to do our best to talk with them. That's why I say sometimes I become a therapist to them about, hey, what can we do over here to structure things better to take pressure off of you so you can, quote, buy time to have less stress to do the things you want to do, whether it's going skiing in the mountains or traveling or, racing cars or, whatever their passion is, just to try to get better life balance.
Yeah. Well, Mark, this has been fascinating. I love what you're doing. I love the fact that you can be kind of that unemotional voice to help people make better decisions and actually to kind of pull together the best team to help grow and manage their wealth. How can people get in touch with you?
Best thing, real simple, just go to, we're kind of old-fashioned in this way, just go to our website, which is HiltonWealth.com, HiltonWealth.com. And I invite everybody to, you can go to the site and there'll be a link there that you can order our latest book, Hilton Wealth. Complimentary, we'll send it out to you. And by the way, we're here if you'd like to get together with us and chat. Do you have questions about kind of strategic things that you're doing related to your finances or your taxes or whatever? We're here to help in any way we possibly can.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate it, Craig. Have a great day.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest. And sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content to make sure you don't miss anything. Please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show It means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.